Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Monday, October the 31st, 2016, 12:13 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You're tuned into the Now program. I'm Scott Spears along with you for the next 2 hours live here on this Halloween. And it is going to be a fun day because we have somebody in studio for the next 2 hours live who hasn't been here for about a year, but we always appreciate when she stops by. And certainly no lack of things to talk about in the world over the past weekend, or really over the past year, or election cycle, or things going on in Ohio. She has been a journalist in, I think since 1967.
77, but yeah.
You know, I was
almost 40 years.
I'll tell you, I was looking this morning. It's Carol Looper, by the way. If you don't recognize the voice, I was looking this morning on YouTube and I saw your retirement video from WSYX, and they had 67 listed.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, they did a 13-minute secret tribute to me that I didn't know about. That it was a big surprise. Just says 67. We're gonna have to go back and. 3 years old, but we'll have to take care of that. 77.
Over 30 years.
Almost 40 years.
Carol, before we get into all the news of the day and everything of that nature, what's been new with you? What's going on?
Well, it's Halloween.
It is.
And I have a huge bucket of candy ready to give away. And I don't usually reveal my opinions about things, still being a journalist at heart. I don't like Halloween. And my mother used to say, when I was 6 or 7, what every kid likes Halloween. You love to get dressed up and get candy. And I remember saying, but I don't like knocking on strangers' doors and begging. I can go to the store and you can give me 10 cents and I can buy candy. So, but we're loaded. We're ready for the kids to come, and we get a lot of them in our neighborhood. So, and I've seen a lot of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump costumes and masks. So I'll be watching at my back door to see if we have Hillary and Donald coming to our door tonight. They're certainly coming to my email.
Well, that's exactly right. Well, you know, this is something that was not around really 20, 30 years ago. People did not dress their kids as political figures. What has changed?
Well, I remember 1 year when Richard Nixon masks were a big deal.
Yeah.
Yes, but I think because of the 24/7 news cycle, because of the availability of news, you know, you pull out your phone and in 5 minutes you can see everything that's happened or happening, I think people are tuned in. And I think that people, even kids, are tuned in. And obviously the current-ness, the immediacy of the candidates is relevant.
Are politicians the new celebrities?
Oh, I think politicians have been celebrities for a long, long time. When I was a kid, I was 13 years old, and I wrote a letter to John Fitzgerald Kennedy, who had just lost the vice presidential nomination to Senator Estes Kefauver. Got a beautiful letter back, and don't you think because of his looks, his charm, and all of what he brought to life, and even the backstory that would now be on all of the Access Hollywood and all those programs, I think John Kennedy could have been called a rock star back then, a celebrity. I think the news people, the network news people, are celebrities. I'm hearing Dan Rather has his own show or blog or something on Sirius XM. So I think, you know, people go out to see Robin Roberts and George Stephanopoulos and Megyn Kelly. These are people who, for many years, covered the news. But I think the people who you see on television repeatedly, and particularly the politicians, have become, yeah, celebrities. People want their autographs. People want to touch. Bill Clinton, you know, he was on Arsenio Hall playing the saxophone. I think that, and I think that, I don't know whether it's good or bad.
Well, I'm just thinking, even into the 90s, I'm thinking of when Clinton ran against Bob Dole. Now, most people obviously know who the president is, but I don't think the majority of the country maybe knew who Bob Dole was. I certainly don't think he had the exposure of Trump and Hillary Clinton. I don't think there was a celebrity. There was Michael Jackson. There was the number one television show, Friends. Those were the celebrities. These were the politicians, and there was a balance. I don't see that balance so much anymore.
I think that because they're, I won't use the term in our face, because they are in our living room, because they are in our kitchen, because we see them all the time, it sort of catapults them into celebrity status. And I don't know where the line is. It's not necessarily positive celebrity. But if you watch television news, people who nobody ever would have heard of. I'm thinking of the columnist, the political commentator Anna Navarro, for example. Who would have known of Anna Navarro? Well, she's on television as a commentator. Case in point, on this Friday night for a gala fundraiser for the Columbus Metropolitan Library, who is their speaker? Yes, it's an author, but would everybody who is coming or everybody who has bought a ticket or wants to hear him know Jeffrey Toobin from his books? I mean, he writes about the Supreme Court and he writes about politics. But because you see him as a commentator on television, Jeffrey Toobin has become a celebrity of sorts.
I was thinking if we would go back even 10 years, 15 years, there is not a person in the world today who does not know Bernie Sanders.
Right.
Who would have known a primary candidate in a Democratic presidential race, senator from Vermont, 15 years ago in a presidential race?
It wouldn't have been on television constantly. And that's our access to politics, stars, to celebrities. That's our access. That's our access to tragedy. That's our access to police-involved shootings. That's our access to court cases. I want to say 100 years ago, I remember when the O.J. Simpson trial was happening, and that was basically the first, and they called it the crime of the century. I was on Channel 6 as a reporter, and there was an evaluation, there was a commentary. Every day at 4 o'clock, there was a half-hour show with local attorneys commenting after the trial went off the air. Every single day, the O.J. Simpson trial became a celebrity. I mean, who would have heard of any of those people? Nobody would have known Ron Goldman, Nicole Simpson. Who would have known the friend whose name escapes me? I think I've blocked him.
Cato Kaelin.
Cato Kaelin. Yeah. I mean, he became, because he was OJ's friend who testified in the he became a nationally known figure. And I think that was really the first time that a court appearance and a tragedy like that gripped the American public, because it was on. I mean, Judge Ito. Who would have ever heard of Judge Ito?
Now, do you think having the attorneys on every day was ratings-driven or story-driven? It certainly was a story, but would it have been every day for a year if it was not drawing interest?
Well, it's a chicken and the egg. Do you broadcast what the people need to hear, what you think people need to hear or see, or do you broadcast what they want? And how do they know what they want? And I keep questioning all of the people who are coming down on either side, saying either the newspaper isn't fair or the television newscasts aren't fair because they aren't covering. And then the person will go into a long tirade about what isn't being covered. And my question is, if you know so much about it, didn't you get it by seeing it or reading it covered? So, and Alan Miller in the Columbus Dispatch yesterday made a very long explanation of the fact that you may not see it being covered because you don't watch 24/7 like I do, but it's being covered, it's being written about. This whole media bias thing, I guess where you stand depends on where you sit, or where you sit depends on where you stand. But I think that the vitriol and the anger and the incivility today is nothing that I or anybody else has ever seen before.
This is a big question, and I think we can talk about this without talking politics, but a big term brought out by the Republican presidential candidate is media bias, and people at his rallies, Trump, have been kicking people in the media, shooing them, yelling things at them. Do you think there's a liberal media bias? Because that's the rub for so many years.
Well, everybody says there's a liberal media bias, except I read an article comparing the amount of coverage that Donald Trump got from day one to the amount of coverage that anybody else got. And then, of course, more recently, since he and Hillary Clinton were named as the two candidates, the amount of coverage for many days, if Donald Trump was speaking, it was covered. He had his time. Do you remember when he was calling in? Gee, I've lived that long. It must be about 6 months. When he was calling in television shows, radio shows, daily. And whenever he called, they would give him the airtime. Not so much now. He's apparently not doing it so much now. Media bias. I don't know. I know that I have tried very hard in my life to be fair and to be unbiased. Well, is there media bias on these two political candidates? Was there media bias when there were 17 Republicans and when Hillary Clinton was running against Bernie Sanders? I would hope that there isn't media bias. And then I guess you have to look in the mirror and say we're all human beings. And we all bring our experiences. And we all bring our past. And we all bring our families and our passions. So I think there is certainly an effort for there not to be media bias. But again, and we can pick up the release of the emails and the FBI director. Just a couple of months ago, in July, the Republicans, Donald Trump, were screaming at Comey for closing the case against Hillary Clinton. He's this, he's that, he's biased. Now they're hugging him to their chests because he brought out whatever there is, and we don't know. So, what did they used to say? The worm turns.
Well, it's interesting, Carol, because what I have found in this election is what you just said is what they would call media bias. They would say that you pointing out a bias by the Republicans against Comey, that they didn't like him when his first decision happened, and now they love him because of what he's done now, that you pointing that out would be your media bias against the Republican
side. Well, give me another 2 minutes, and when the original case against Hillary Clinton was closed, the Democrats and the Clinton people were very happy to point to it repeatedly, over and over again. Case closed, case closed, case closed. It's July. There's no. Well, even early on, before it was case closed, Bernie Sanders said something like, I'm tired of hearing about those damn emails. So certainly there was a sigh of relief, and Comey was their man. And then now, hurry up, give us more information. You've thrown something into the election, and we're not your buddy anymore. And of course, the claims with all the surrogates, particularly the Republican-Trump surrogates this morning, was, well, look at Bill Clinton and how he went on the Attorney General's plane, and shouldn't she have disqualified herself from being the person who made the decision about whether to close the emails or not? And now the Democrats are saying, well, Comey should withdraw and resign, and it's a fine mess you've gotten us into, Ollie.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because what we have done here, and we have had the notes, and we're transparent in the idea that people think that we're more pro-Hillary than pro-Donald.
We who?
The station. as a general, and maybe me. I mean, it could be directed at me explicitly. But now here's the problem that I think we're in, because Donald Trump is unlike any other candidate. And when you go out and say things that are out of the ordinary, and to me, news is that of which is out of the ordinary, you report on it. So he just tends to do that more than Hillary does. So you report on him more often. But when you do that and people see that of what he does in a negative light, well, then why aren't you covering her as much? And that's media bias.
Well, the interesting thing to me in watching the coverage is that it seems that Donald Trump is offended either by the commercials or the reporters. In fact, I think there was a Saturday Night Live. I mean, there have been a lot of Saturday Night Live issues and presentations and sketches. But one that they did, they all have a grain of truth, where Alec Baldwin, as Donald Trump, says, there's media bias, there's media bias, there's media bias. Why is there media bias, Mr. Trump? Well, they take the things I say, and they take the things I do, and they put them on the air. And I thought to myself, well, yeah, we do that with Hillary Clinton, and we do that with Donald Trump. The things that he says may be more colorful, may be more controversial, but yeah, that's what news reporters do. We take the things they say and take the things they do and put them on the air. That's our job.
That being said, because the big story of the weekend certainly was the emails,
yes,
and Hillary's Achilles heel this entire election has been the emails. What do you make of the story Friday, which is essentially, for anybody out there who didn't follow it over the weekend, maybe people had other plans and got away from the news. I know a lot of people are doing that. They're fed up with this election.
They voted absentee early, and they've turned it off.
So for people who didn't hear, what basically happened Friday is James Comey, the director of the FBI, released a statement essentially saying, and you can get the statement online, that they have found more emails that were on a laptop that was involved with Anthony Weiner and Uma, one of Hillary's aides, still one of Hillary's aides, and they need to look at those emails to see if they have anything to do with classified information in regard to Hillary Clinton 11 days before the election. That's essentially the story. What do you make of that, Carol?
Well, I have a lot of questions, and I think everybody has a lot of questions, although the Trump side wants to just let it lay out there, you know, let it fester, if you will. The Hillary Clinton side says, you said there were emails, many emails, from a computer connected to, or a laptop or whatever, connected to whom? People who are, it didn't say anything in Comey's letter to Congress about whose emails they were, who wrote them, whose server they were found on, who they were to, and what they were about. So the words may be damaging, may be connected, did not come out of the Hillary Clinton investigation, so he was correct when he said that investigation was over, but we know that the Anthony Weiner investigation goes on. There are so many possible things that this could be about. It could be terrible. It could be nothing. But the people will choose what they want to believe. My problem as being a journalist and a reporter for all these years is we don't jump to conclusions. We don't report. We don't make things up. We first get the facts, and then we report them. I think that there has been a great disservice done to everybody by not revealing who wrote these, who they were to, who they were from, where exactly they were found, what they were about, and who do they implicate. We can guess, and you're going to guess for your side, or you're going to let it sit there.
Senator Harry Reid came out last night with a statement and basically said that Comey, the head of the FBI, is in violation of the Hatch Act, which is a United States federal law whose main provision prohibits employees in the executive branch of the federal government, except the president, vice president, and certain designated high-level officials of that branch, from engaging in some forms of political activity. Now, because he did not really say anything, did not give details, 11 days out from a presidential election, and clearly this damaged Hillary Clinton. She was not a happy person on Friday. Do you think he's violated that?
Did he violate it in July?
I don't know. That's a question.
That's a question. Was it okay for him to speak out, which FBI directors don't do? As a reporter for many, many, many years, it was part of my responsibility to cover cases where the FBI was involved. And the FBI was one of the most frustrating organizations to try to interview because the FBI does not comment on pending cases. The FBI does not comment, period. The voice of the FBI is the U.S. attorney and the U.S. attorney who prosecutes the cases that the FBI brings. And the FBI is not an entity with no boss because the U.S. attorneys speak for the FBI. So I'm not a lawyer. I can't answer the question as to whether he broke any laws. But I think the bigger question is why? Now, they're asking, why did he do this when he did it? Well, some will say if he didn't, he would be accused of a cover-up. And why did he speak out? Well, some are saying because it would have leaked. Of course it would have leaked. I don't understand the timing because I'm seeing in the news that the FBI has known about this for quite a while. The biggest question to me is why did it come out? Why did he send the letter to Congress Friday? Not last Monday, not next Monday. I don't have any answers. And as a nosy, inquisitive journalist, you're never a former journalist. It lives with you inside you. I got a lot of questions that I think need to be answered. I think as it stands, the way it was done, and the fact that we have no information, and the fact that there are so many people out there looking for a reason not to vote for Hillary Clinton, that it obviously muddies the political waters.
I'm going to come to Sean Kraft here in a second, who's with us in the studio, too, on this question. But I do want to, I think, honestly, that what they would say in regard to the Hatch Act is they would say this was July the 5th, I believe, or 6th, when the announcement, they would say, well, yes, that is a presidential cycle, but that's before everything else, and before the conventions, before the debates, and it doesn't really tamper with it because we had to make a decision. This, on the other hand, 11 days out, really could change this election.
I think that back then it had an impact. And I think back then it had perhaps a positive impact, although the doubters, the deniers, didn't believe that it was case closed. And lo and behold, it looks like it's not case closed.
Sean, we're talking about Hillary Clinton's emails. We've talked about them, boy, oh boy, this entire year. They come back into light 11 days before the election. Could this cost her the election? Did the FBI director do something wrong, considering he doesn't seem to have all the facts?
Certainly, you know, they're making stories, I guess. They're making, media, that's for sure.
But this is the director of the FBI. He's supposed to be a partisan guy. If he did have information...
He's supposed to be nonpartisan.
Yeah, you're right. Nonpartisan. Ooh. Yeah, that's exactly right. He's supposed to be a nonpartisan guy. And if he had information on her, surely bring that out there. If you have something that needs to be brought to light, but I haven't seen that yet.
And yet, If you have been watching closely, and I have been watching closely, it doesn't seem to matter, positive or negative. As Donald Trump said in one of his speeches, I could walk down Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and it wouldn't change what my support, how my supporters feel about me. I think that we used to call somebody like Ronald Reagan Teflon, because whatever bad happened seemed not to stick. And I think that there is a level of support for Donald Trump in this country that it just doesn't matter. Again, his supporters are going to believe him and believe as they will. Emails, not emails, foreign policy, not foreign policy. What did he say today? 12,000 immigrants are going to come in and swell our country to three times its size and make our population. Whatever. There are so many issues that there is a divergence of opinion on. But so his supporters are going to be his supporters. Her supporters are going to be her supporters, people who are just – and 20 million people in the United States have already voted. But to those people who are still making up their minds, I think this will have a very, very incredible impact. How can you say that it won't? By virtue of that, is it meddling with the political process?
If she does not win, and people hearken back to this as the turn in the polls, and then we find out when the investigation is over that it was nothing, is that just politics and life? Is that just the way it goes?
There are those who say she stands a chance, if she does win, of being indicted or charged or something as president of the United States. And so the color of this election, the facts of it, I mean, if you watch the Donald Trump rallies and they supporters scream, lock her up, and it hasn't stopped. And I think this has made it even more loud or more realistic, perhaps, even though we don't know anything. People are willing to assume the worst.
Sean, obviously the FBI Director Comey did not want to take any more heat. He took a lot of heat back in July for his decision, along with a lot of other people's. And that's the idea of why he did this. But should he have waited until he had some concrete evidence, even though it would have leaked, to come out and say, this is what we have. This is because he's essentially said nothing. He said, we know they're there. We need to go through them.
Certainly. I mean, I think he just did this just for, you know, to get stuff off his back.
Do you think speaking of the partisan word, do you think the FBI director is being partisan, is being unfair?
Well, you know, he's a Republican.
He is a Republican, but is he operating in a nonpartisan role? Is he just being unbiased or doing this 11 days before the election without any concrete information out of his own letter? Is that bias?
And without the imprimatur of the Attorney General of the United States.
Now, we'll get into that in a second. But is it bias for him to do this without the information?
I don't know if it's bias, but I think it's unfair to the Hillary Clinton's campaign. Because, you know, the people are worrying about these emails. I'm not worrying about them. But there's certain people out there that are worrying about them. It doesn't concern me.
Carol, let's talk about the Attorney General. The Attorney General meets Bill Clinton on a tarmac somewhere that has forever muddied the water. Is that why she's not involved in this right now?
She is the boss of the head of the FBI. We don't know whether Bill Clinton, in his way, sort of forced an invitation to her plane, or whether he had an invitation, or whether he just said, oh, I'm going to go say hi to her. Whatever, it was obviously a mistake, and it was unnecessary, and it too has muddied the waters. But she has a job, and she has to do her job. And in light of the fact that she said, it's a mistake to release this for whatever, for all of the reasons we've been talking about. I think that he's going to have his hands full with criticism. But it doesn't really, I don't think it really will affect the outcome unless we know more. I mean, there are enough intelligent people, I think, who will say, I can't draw a conclusion unless they already have a pre-drawn conclusion in their mind, and then nothing is going to change that.
Well, see, but here's the thing. The pre-drawn conclusion, even before the emails about Hillary Clinton, is, in all the polls, only 30% of the country trusts her. Now, that's not people who are going to vote for her, because before this scandal, 48, 46, depending on which poll you looked at, if people were going to vote for her, but only 32% said she was trustworthy. That means there already is a doubt about her trustworthiness. Does this reinforce that doubt and possibly cost her those votes?
Well, I think trustworthiness as an issue has to be defined. And I think that there are polls that have determined that the level of her trustworthiness is a different level than the level of Donald Trump's trustworthiness. There were studies done in the last debate. There was I don't know whether you call him a fact checker, but there was somebody who studied who told the truth more. And I think she was three or four or five things she either exaggerated or overdid or lied about. And they found 41 times that he exaggerated or lied. Okay, if the news media is biased, why isn't there more reporting about the trustworthiness of one candidate over the other candidate? The whole email, remove the email issue from the mix. Then you get to Benghazi. And that is an issue that has people, again, conflicted. Where are the truths? Where are the lies? It's very, very hard to overcome some of the issues with the Benghazi matter. And then you get back to Donald Trump, and you look at, if he said something today, is he going to say the same thing tomorrow, or is he going to change his mind?
I think maybe we're getting a call here. Let's check it out and see if it is. Hey, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Your business name, address,
well,
and...
I think that was something else. But we are taking phone calls, by the way, 740-38... I don't think I gave the number. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Carol Luper's the guest. She'll be with us through 2 o'clock today. So 740-383-9944. Here's a curious thing that I don't understand. If back in July, when Comey made this decision about we can indict or press charges against Hillary Clinton for these reasons, people, as we've noted earlier on, said that the fix is in, the government's in on this, and she can get around anything because she has ties. Well, the fact now that he has come back and reinvestigating it, and also the Loretta Lynch thing, because that deal was cut and that's why this all happened. If a deal was cut and Comey was just in on it because of politics and Hillary Clinton can sway anybody, then why is this happening?
Nobody knows.
Yeah.
How did the FBI get to these emails? Are these emails new or have they already seen them? Well, gosh, I can't tell you because I haven't seen them to be able to tell whether we've seen them already. I think that it'll be important to find out exactly when they were discovered, and were they on Anthony Weiner's emails or Huma Abedin's emails? Apparently, they shared. I mean, I wouldn't do that with my husband. My emails are my emails, and his emails are his emails. Even though we forward each other just about everything, yeah. Anyway, sharing iffy. And I think that he is a figure who was perhaps laughable early on in all of this discussion about his sexting and getting treatment and changing and not changing. Now it has gone way beyond the laughable stage to critical mass. I mean, he, if there is damaging material about things he may have learned or transmitted, that is very dangerous to the country. But how do we know?
Well, if the fix was in, because from July until Friday, and Donald Trump's campaign wants to win, Hillary Clinton's campaign wants to win, but for the majority of people who just call into this show, who give opinions every day, there was this idea that Hillary Clinton works inside the government, that Bill Clinton cut a deal on this tarmac back in July. If the fix was in July, why is the fix still not in? Because certainly this didn't help her any on Friday.
I don't think we can know until we know what material there is, what's in it. How did they get there? I mean, have they been, since they started the Anthony Weiner investigation, which was a sexting an underage, a 15-year-old girl, in a compromising situation, a compromising picture? Have they been investigating that since it came out? Every day, every other day, who's been investigating? They said a different team from the team who started investigating that reported finding that. Where are these people? Who are these people? Have FBI agents who look into crimes and solve crimes and find bad guys and have a 10 most wanted list, have they been doing nothing but looking through Anthony Weiner's emails for months and months and months? Why?
We have about 10 minutes left in this first hour, and since we did talk about media bias in this hour, I want to finish up with this story. Happened about 2 weeks ago of somebody you know, somebody who came on the program, Colleen Marshall from WCMH in Columbus. Donald Trump spoke in Delaware. She had a few minutes with him after the speech. She asked him a question that started out to be about race, but Colleen herself said the end of the question was, basically, how will you... It was not the... I guess not what he assumed the question was going to be. She didn't get a chance to finish the question because he walked away, turned back to her, shot her a look, and said, I'm the least racist person you'll ever meet. Now, because of that, Colleen received a lot of nasty comments about being biased and that media bias, and so did Channel 4. When that story broke, what did you think?
Well, I think one of the things that reporters cherish is their ability to get something first, their ability to zoom in, to get something that no other reporter has gotten a subject to say. And reporters are creative, are aggressive, but she obviously, in her 3 minutes or minute and a half, whatever they gave her with him, wanted to get an answer to a controversial question. That's her job. The fact that he didn't let her finish her question and walked away from her would indicate not that there was necessarily anything wrong with what she did, but would sort of reflect on his temperament. He doesn't talk to the reporters he doesn't like. He doesn't let certain reporters into his news conferences. So it certainly didn't come as a surprise. I think that the people who feel that it may have been insulting to Donald Trump will be negative about it. I think that reporters who look at it as a job that you have to do, and sometimes you toss a question at somebody that they didn't like. I mean, I can write you a list of people who I got along with just fine and thought I was tough but thought I was fair and really didn't want to answer a lot of the questions. But you can't pick and choose the questions you answer. You can say, I don't like that question. I'm not going to answer it. Go away. But he did it in such a Trump-like way. He walked away from her and then turned back where she had no recourse and shot a rebuke to her. I mean, was that successful? Was that unsuccessful? Did she elicit anything from him? Probably not. Did you ask her if she would do it again?
Yes, and I think she would, but I think the fallout is what was unexpected.
I think in this campaign, where tempers are high, where opinions are strong, where there are people whose hatred appears to be stoked by the candidate they're supporting, nothing negative is a bit surprising. It's almost like you can't insult my family member. Don't you dare insult Donald Trump. That seems to be the supporters' mantra.
Here's the thing, and this was a long discussion that I got into that day with somebody, and I think it was on social media, but I've held to this long before this. 100 years ago, there was a reporter, and I believe she was in Washington, D.C., and she wrote a great book. Nobody will remember her, but Faye Emerson. And Faye Emerson wrote this book, and I read it, and one thing she said in there that has always stuck with me is, there's no such thing as an indiscreet question. Because if it's open-ended, then the interviewee is always in control because they can always say none of your business. They can always say I don't want to answer. They can give an answer that maybe trumps your question. So can a question in and of itself really be bias? Can I hurt you with a question?
I suppose you can if in your question there is bias. If you were to say to me, do I really perceive that you are favoring Donald Trump? Well, you've put that out there. You've put something out there, even though it's in the form of a question. Do I really perceive? So let me get this straight. You're biased against Hillary Clinton? Or you're biased against Donald Trump? I think the question itself imputes something. I don't know. Yes, I think there are questions. But of course, look at the monkey business. And maybe if it weren't for reporters asking impertinent or impudent questions, we'd have had a President Gary Hart.
Well, I was running through my head, and I was trying to think of a question, because I put myself on the other side. And I thought, is there a question that somebody could ask me that would damage me that I could not get out of by being allowed to answer? And I just could not...
By not being allowed to answer.
Because if you say the most... if you accuse me of the most horrible thing... Because, for example, if you say, Scott, did you murder such and such? Now, that's a nasty question, especially if I haven't murdered anybody. But my answer is going to be, why would you ask such a thing? Of course I've never murdered anybody, and any record you would like to look into, please feel free to do.
But that's a hypothetical.
What is a question, though, that if I'm asking a politician a question, that would the question alone would simply damage them if they have the chance to respond?
Well, I think... the Chandra Levy murder, the question, did you murder, I'm trying to remember who did it, Connie Chung did an interview with Condit, and he was able and allowed to answer and answered every question. I don't know that the questions themselves, but because he was suspected, the questions were relevant and pertinent. If I asked you if you murdered somebody, that's out there as a hypothetical.
I'm glad you brought that up because I remember how he answered that. Gary Condon was the guy in the Chandra Levy case. And here's where he made his mistake in that, if I was advising him. Larry King asked the same question at that time of Gary Condon. He said, did you have anything to do with the disappearance of Chandra Levy? Now, people would see that as a damaging question. But how Gary Condon answered it was the problem. He said, I don't want to comment on that. And I remember Larry said, now, I respect your right to not comment on that, but you do realize that if you say, no, I didn't, that's firm. But if you say, I'm not going to answer, people do think you have something to be involved. So I think it's all in the answer.
Well, I think that people who plead the Fifth Amendment, because we in America have the right not to incriminate ourselves, automatically believe that anybody who takes the Fifth is guilty. And that's not how it was meant. But I think that I do think that the way a question is asked, perhaps, can be damning or damaging. But I've gotten many no comments. And the people who advise politicians how to answer questions say a no comment is perceived as a negative, as perceived as affirming that the questioner has asked you something that you can't deny. So nobody ever is supposed to say no comment. You can say, I prefer not to answer that.
But on the flip side, this is interesting, with a minute before we break for 15 and then come back for the other hour with Carol Looper. And this is a fun conversation to have. But on the other side, with Donald Trump, just because he's a person who answers in sort of a bombastic way, like a question that would mean nothing and not have any ill intent, like, what do you think of Rosie O'Donnell? That is not a malicious question.
Yeah, it is.
Well, to him, is it?
Sure.
We know how he feels about her.
So why would somebody ask that question?
So if we look at Colleen, we know what he has said. So is that a malicious question?
Well, I think he said the other day that he's starting to like Rosie O'Donnell better
than maybe not malicious anymore.
So I guess my answer would be, because you think he is going to respond because in the past he has said that that's how he feels about something, doesn't necessarily mean that he feels the same way or will respond the same way today.
But with 10 seconds, because we were talking about Colleen Marshall, he has been asked that question before that she was asking. I think pretty much variations of it. So was her asking that wrong? Because we pretty much knew what the answer was. And he gave an answer, I am the least racist person you will ever meet.
I don't think you can talk right and wrong, right or wrong. I mean, I think every reporter has a right to ask any question that's out there.
And I think that's right. I think that's where we go. Carol Looper is the guest. We're having a good time. 15-minute break, and we'll be back on the other side. Stay with us here.